Then you confided in an elder and you told that person that you needed a job that would allow you to help people. That then led you to the work of continuing to help people. Let's talk about you and Wilma, where you met, fell in love.
Well, I first met Wilma, I was coming in from the field one day, and I got a message saying that Wilma Mankiller wants to talk to you, wants to meet with you. And back then, Wilma was a big name, the person, the name, the tribe. I thought, what's she want to see me for? They said, she'll meet you at the Cherokee Nation office in Stillwell. So I drove by. I went to the door and to the Cherokee Nation office, and I told somebody, I'm here to meet with Wilma Mankiller. Said, you're here to meet Wilma? I said, yes. She said, hang on. First time I ever saw her, she came to the door and met me. She said the first thing she ever said to me in person was, so you're the infamous Charlie Soap.
The infamous.
I said, I don't know who I am in that term, but I said, I'm Charlie Soap. She said, I got one question to ask you. She said, I need a house built. Can you help me? I said, I have one question to ask you. She said, what's that? And I said, is your request to build a house on restricted land? She said, yes. I said, well, it'll take a long time because you got to go through a lot of bureaucracy to get the restrictions of the land removed. You have to have a clear title. She said, that's just all I didn't know. She turned around and walked off. Wound up, she built her own house, didn't have to go through the tribe. She built her own house.
She built her.
I met with her.
And you said no to her at first. In a way.
I didn't say no. I just quoted the policy.
Right.
But I would have helped her build a house.
Sure. You know. But then...
And then later on, we met somewhere else at the Stomp Dance, I think, where we were Stomp Dance. But that's before that. Bell Water Project was being talked about. I didn't know exactly what all that was, and I'd heard people talk about it off and on. And then one day I was told they wanted to see me in the director's office, so I go back there and... When I walked in, there's the director, all the heads of the department, Ross Swimmer, and the attorneys sitting there. When I walked to the door, Ross Swimmer said, if any man can do it, he said, that man right there can. I said, doing what? And I looked over there, and Wilma Mankiller sitting to the right. She said, how you doing, Mr. Soap? I said, I'm doing fine, Miss Mankiller. And she sat down beside her. And I was intimidated by her because she was everybody the world over. And she was just a big shot, you know. And here I'm just an old country boy, you know. And I listened to them. I thought, man, they're talking about bail. That's a rugged community. They don't know what they're getting into. So anyway, I walked out. But I had some relatives back in the community also. My brother lived there. And I thought, well, they might be able to do something with their help. I remember I walked into the conference room, I was looking out the window, and I thought, that's going to be hard to do, because those people, they don't trust the tribe, they don't trust the housing, they don't trust anybody. And then someone spoke behind me, and she said, what do you think, Mr. Soap? I turned around, Wilma was standing there, and I said, you think we can do it? I said, it's going to be hard. She said, you better change your way of thinking, because we're going to do it. I said, okay. And then one day, after working together, she wanted me to come by the house. I went by the house, and she was having trouble with one of her daughters and wanted to talk to me about it. And I said, you talk about spirituality and all this. She said, so I just need to talk to you about some things about that. I just told her, you know, we pray and ask God to help us with our issues, with our problems and things. She said, tell me more about this dude you call Jesus. I said, he's not a dude. I said, it's Jesus, because she wasn't a believer at the time. So she started going to church, and then later on came by the house again after some time, maybe a month or two or something like that. I could tell there was something. I really had a lot of respect for her because she really was someone that I'd never experienced, had seen before, where really liked people, was pure at heart, having love and caring about the people. Boy, she's different from anybody. So I was attracted to her and things like that. I guess we were both attracted, and that's when we embraced and we kissed, and that was it.
So then on the Bell Water Project, which became famous, actually, Chief Ross Swimmer put, I guess, his principles on the line, and he bet his chances for re-election on that 17-mile-long water line for Bell, Oklahoma, because the Cherokee community had no running water at all.
Yeah, that was a community that couldn't get funding for housing because their houses, plumbing was so, those houses were dilapidated, really poor homes, and what good would it do if we put water in there, because you have plumbing problems and all that. We couldn't get funding for it because of housing, and then we couldn't get housing because there was no water. So that's when they came up with this self-help water line. It was phenomenal. So many things happened, positive things happened to that community, to the people. They had great leadership. They had great people there. Once we started getting into it, working with them, those people were tenacious. They wouldn't give up or anything. They worked during the hot summer months, during the cold winter months. They wanted water. But we had to reach them first, right, because they didn't trust us.
So then you actually went out to call on a few people around Bell, and you knocked on doors, small community gatherings. I mean, you had to sell this,
right,
the idea, but then you needed volunteers as well.
Right.
You needed everybody.
It was difficult because, like I said, they didn't trust the tribe, the housing authority, the government, or anything like that. And then when I started talking about it and, you know, telling them to get water, said, oh, we've been promised water before. We're not going to get it. And I think one of the most disturbing comments that I heard towards me was something like, oh, you're just another Indian coming in here. You're going to do this, do that. He said, you're not going to do anything. I thought, where do I go from here? And I said, well, I mean it. I really mean it. We're going to do something. He said, you're just another Indian making promises. So I don't want to talk about it. It was difficult, hard.
How long did that go before the first dig actually began to work?
We called for meetings probably 2 or 3 months before anybody really came. We go out there. They didn't believe us. They thought we were just saying stuff like other people have. It was very difficult. But we started doing little projects, like helping somebody replace a screen door or replace windows. The little stuff that was important to them, or help somebody mend a fence, or Wilma would buy materials like fencing materials or boards for repairing some small items and things. That's how we started getting attention. Hey, those guys really mean it. They'll do something. They'll help. They're really helping, you know. And so then it was something that the leaders, my brother Johnson was involved in church, so we started going to churches and asking the people there to help us. The preacher was an important part of the decision that we needed, that they should help us. Then they were the healers, the medicine men, the community listened to. We went to them. That finally got inside their arena where they were blocking us out.
This water line, how deep down would you have to dig?
At least 2 foot.
And so that was rocky?
Oh, yeah.
And so did you?
Very rocky.
And you did it both by hand? You had equipment to help?
I think from the onset, I never thought anything like this had been politics. It was political from the very beginning, after later on as things started happening. They gave us shoddy equipment. The backhoe was worn out. Jackhammers were worn out. But it's amazing how people came on board, like this guy named Curly. Poor man. Nobody really thought much about him. He came to work. And in a month's time, he was the most important man they had on there. They had so much respect for him because that guy could repair dozers. He could repair jackhammers, anything mechanical wrong, he could fix it. And that won him over to the people. He started that project from the beginning to the end, and everybody liked him.
Hmm.
That was a big plus for us when we had those shoddy equipment.
Hmm. Were 2-mile segments assigned to certain neighbors? Did you take it in pieces?
Yeah, we had all those 18 miles. We thought, it's the number of families we divided, we'll do 2 miles. And so that kind of equaled out to how it would be evenly divided, how many people are going to work. And they said, once you finish 2 miles, that's it. You don't have to work no more. Another group would take over. It started out, it was pretty good. And then it got to be where people were saying, boy, we dug this far today, and one day we dug so far. And you could tell there was some body language from the people for the other groups that smile or that kind of look at each other, not knowing that's going in their mind was, we can do that faster. It got to be competitive. One group was all women.
And they were digging.
They were good. They were digging. And I'll tell you what, I could tell you some stories about those women that was in the Waterline project. Not only there, but other projects we worked on. I mean, they could work. But women worked there, and the people worked together, and it got to be competitive. Who's going to dig the fastest 2 miles? And that's really helped us, you know?
Yeah. All these people got together and probably didn't mean they loved each other, but they had little issues amongst each other.
When we were working in the community, people would say, whatever you do, don't put them together because they're
a fight will break out.
Yeah. And so Wilma came up with the idea, we got to get these people together somehow. Everybody's got to work together. She said, we're going to put these people together and let them work together. I said, oh, my God. But we put them together. But it worked. You know, once they got in and working together, they'd start talking to each other. The next thing you know, they're laughing and working. And it really solved a lot of problems.
Beyond the water line.
Yes.
They ended up probably liking each other.
They got along pretty good. Matter of fact, some of them got to be pretty good fishing buddies and stuff like
that.
That's
something.
You know?
Wow. Yeah. You know, I talked to Wilma in her oral history about the Bell Project, and I thought you'd like to hear what she said. I'm going to read to you what she said, and then we'll respond. And so she said, it didn't mean that they loved each other, but they would help each other. And so we tapped into that. The day that we started the Bell Project, after organizing people very tightly for a long period of time to work on the water line and build the water line themselves, we assigned certain families to a 2-mile section. And then that would be done, and then another family would take over the second 2 miles. And when we drove down to Bell that day, I remember we had CBS Sunday Morning News there, and Ross Swimmer was there, and coming around that bend up to where the project was starting, I had a moment where I hoped. I just thought, what if they don't show up after this? This is what I believed all my life was people would do this. So when we turned around the corner, and there were cars there and people there. And you know, we had our old dilapidated backhoe ready to go. It was just an incredible sight. That was a very inspiring project, very inspiring project. For you to hear her talk about that moment has to be special for you, right, Charlie?
That's the night that people came together at that meeting. Yeah, we were driving down the road hoping that people would be there. And we went around this sharp curve and you could see the Bell School. And I mean, there were cars parked all over the place, side the road, down the ditches, across the ditch. Oh, my God, I said, look at that crowd. She said, this is unbelievable. And I said, yeah. She said, Charlie, you're going to have to get up and speak. I said, there's too many people. I can't speak like that. So Charlie, you got to. We walked in the cafeteria. It was jam-packed. It was awesome.
Yeah, and all three of us, Christina, you, and me, we all have tears in our eyes right now as you're telling that story.
Yeah.
And you laid all that groundwork and brought them together to begin that project.
Yeah, it was amazing. And everybody was happy. They knew that this was going to be real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it was in 1983, the crew could see a little red flag off in the distance. Tell us about that.
Well, we were getting to the end of the project, to the end of the line, and Curly was a backhoe operator. He could use dynamite. He could do anything you wanted done. So we got there. They were working, and he was sitting up on the backhoe. And I walked up there, and I said, Curly, I guess you're going to be happy this is over because, man, you've been with this all the way through. He got real teary-eyed. He said, I hate to see this come to a close. He said, I have met so many nice people here. He said, there's all good people, Charlie. He said, I'm going to miss this. He said, I don't know what I'm going to do. Curly, I said, we've been talking to Burnt Cabin. Burnt Cabin is going to need water, too. We used that word skadoogie where everybody working together was, and he looked at me and says, skadoogie. I said, yeah, skadoogie. And of all people who shows up for the cabin, one of the first people that showed up was Curly. He come driving up. Yeah. He worked with the surf for a while.
Man, it just, but the whole thing gives me chills as you're talking about it.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Curly then? Did he stay with that?
He's gone now.
Yeah.
But this is what I hear, this is what I hear, and I'll probably get emotional here. But the story is, this guy, Bill, and his dad was walking down this dirt road close to their house, and they saw this smoke coming out up to the bridge. And they said, "We'll see us down there." And she went down there and said, "Dad, there's some man down here under that bridge. Looks like he's cooking." So they went on, they got to their house, and they told Cindy that there was a man there. I said, "Well, why didn't you bring him? Tell him to come and eat with us." He said, "I don't know who he is." He said, "I don't matter." I said, "Go get him." So knowing that family, you have to know that the lady, Cindy, very powerful leader. She doesn't give up if she wants something. She always helps people. Very strong lady. So they went back and talked him into coming. They don't know how long he'd been there, but he said he needed the bath and all that. And so they fed him and cooked for him. And then they asked him if he needed a bath. He said, "I could use one." But he said, "Well, go in the bathroom and take a bath." He said, "I couldn't do that. I won't do that." So they said, "What if we close the kitchen off and we got a tub and heated water for you, and then you can clean up there?" He said, "I'll do that." So that's what they did. They gave him a tub. He cleaned up. And the story is that when he got through, they said his hair was real curly. So Cindy asked him, "Do you mind if I call you Curly?" He said, "No, that's fine." They said, "You want me to cut some of your hair off and trim it out?" She said, "Oh, I would love that." So time goes on. They asked him if he would stay with them, and they took him in. He stayed with them. And they noticed later on that there would be several cars parked in their yard. And they would say, "Well, who's here? Who's here?" Nobody would be there, but Curly would be out there working on those cars. Somehow the people in the community found out that he was a mechanic. So they started bringing their cars there. And then one day he was gone. He was gone. He was gone to town. They didn't hear from him again. And what happened was he had found a woman. They had got acquainted with the woman. And he took up with her. That woman was blind. And he was taking care of her and living with her. To come to find out her last name was Soap.
Of your relatives.
Yeah. I don't know what relation she was, but the people talked about that. Said, but anyway, they wound up building a new home for them. But that's the kind of stuff that happened.
That story you just told about Curly, that was before the Bell Project.
Yeah.
That's how he came to the attention of everybody.
The Bell Project. But somewhere down the road, some people came and visited with Bill and them, because they're gone. Those people are gone. They were asking about that guy, Curly. And they said, "You know what?" He said, "There's a big garage in Kansas City, and he used to work there. And one day he just left. He's the best mechanic they ever had. He's gone." And that's where he left and wound up in our part of the country.
Did he just disappear, and all of you never knew where he ever went?
From Kansas? They didn't know where he went, yeah. He came here, but then...
Yeah, but then he left your community, and you didn't know where he went. Is that true? So you don't know where and when he died?
No, I didn't. Of course, back then we were so busy.
Yeah.
That self-help movement took off so fast. Sometimes we had 8, 9 projects going at one time in these different communities, water lines. People wanted water. So I'd go in and organize those groups and say, "This is how you need to do it." Or I'd bring some of the people in bail and say, "How did you do this?" They'd ask all these questions. And that's what they wanted to do, what they wanted to build it. They had a bunch of lines going sometime.
So then to complete the Bell story, Jim Kaufman, a volunteer, took a wrench to a valve.
That's when they opened that water.
Water gushed from the water faucet in the Four Killer family home.
Yeah.
That changed the whole community, didn't it? When that water came through into those homes.
It changed a lot of things. Not only Bell, but other communities. Still yet, there's still a need in some of these rural communities. They don't have water.